Well, yeah, you know, we're talking about Washington and Lee being conservative, and it was conservative when I came in 1977.
Sure. Well, relatively speaking.
And the students were, but there were all these relatively recent graduates who obviously had not been.
It was a funny little anomaly in there in the middle of everything. Because, yeah, it was very conservative. Well, of course, when we came, as I said, there were all those dear old professors. I mean, they wouldn't have thought of themselves as conservative. They were just, that was the way things were. They were just Southern. They're lovely. They were just lovely. And Dr. Flournoy and Dr. Guillory. I guess Dean Pusey was probably the last of that old guard. He was the youngest of the old guard, maybe. I don't know.
Well, it swung back pretty.
I wonder if it'll.
Now.
I wonder if it'll ever go that way again. I really do. Probably not. I mean, after all, it took a national movement, practically, to even impinge on this place. It sort of lapped up on the shore of Washington and Lee for a few years and went away.
So were you there? Were you a witness to what happened in May of 1970?
Oh, you mean the strike?
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, we were in Europe. We missed all that good stuff.
Really?
Yeah, that was Odell's sabbatical. We were in Switzerland. We missed Camille. We missed the great flood of 69.
Well, that was a good thing to know.
Oh, yeah, because my kids were really bad. They were really bad. They were at that age where, hey, we would have got out of school, and look at all that water. We got all these pictures from the newspaper and everything. And they, wow, look at that. Anyway. No, Cully was our, he was here for that when they sent him to Vietnam. Protesters. Yeah, he got so involved in student politics there that his grades dropped off and he automatic doubt and had to go to Vietnam.
Who's that?
Cully Blake. He came back and knocked their socks off. He's really brilliant. I guess he's got 2 or 3 degrees in, you know, like theoretical physics and stuff like that. He's some kind of computer whiz and genius, and worked for the MITRE Corporation up in Washington for 10 or 12 years. He's really bright. I think he's Odell's soul son, mm-hmm. You know. They're really a lot alike. Cully was one of the original mongrel horde, too. He loved the old-time music. He couldn't play anything for sour apples. He's got about as much musical talent as I do. But he found the Jew's harp, you know, ba-doing, ba-doing, ba-doing. And that they let him play. He really had a good time with that.
Well, back to this fraternity stuff. And I've don't grown too much, Maven. You know, I went to a school that didn't have fraternities.
So did I.
So, coming here in the 70s was not eye-opening, it was eye-popping.
Well, of course, they had absolutely trashed the houses by then.
Can you describe what was happening then, since they were right around the corner from you?
Well, in 70, what was it, 72 or 3, anyway, we were living in the Hollow, you know, off on Letcher, that very first house. I'm not sure who's in it now. Randy Emmons had it after we did. I don't know who's in there now, but anyway, we lived there. And I remember sitting out on the screened-in porch one night and seeing, it was either Fidel or Pica, burn a piano. That was the sort of thing that was going on back in that. They had, you know, animal house all over the campus. They were really just trashed.
And was this every night of the week?
Well, I mean, they didn't burn a piano every night. But, you know, basically, I remember when Chris Leva was a freshman, I had to go over and pick up a guitar at the Beta House that he left there for his older brother, James. And the smell, when you walked in the door of that place, I have never been in the, well, the rankest bar I can think of in Lexington was Estelle's, down behind Leggett's. You know, now it's that lovely doctor's building and everything, but Estelle's was a really low-down beard bar. You know, sad people sitting around drinking beer, and it stank. But it didn't smell anywhere near as bad as the Beta House smelled when I walked in the front door. I mean, barf, stale beer, urine, funk. I mean, it was nasty. It was just nasty. And they were like that. All the houses were like that. I mean, it's no wonder they had to put, what, several teen million dollars into fixing them up.
So what do you think of this idea of, instead of just shutting them down, saving them? Do you think that was a good idea?
Oh, well, I'm sure financially it had to be done. I mean, building dorms for all those people would have been, I don't think it would have been cost effective. And the houses, I mean, they're definitely a whole lot better than they were. I don't know what's happened in the last couple of years. I haven't been keeping up, but I don't know. Fraternities aren't what they used to be. When we came here in the 60s, they were gentlemen's clubs, and there was a fraternal feeling, you could tell, and that was back when they still had house mothers, and it was kind of genteel, and you know, faculty were invited. Odell was a spe, and so we were invited to the spe house quite often for dinner and things like that, and you were always invited to the parents' weekend cocktail parties and stuff, and you know, everything was sort of under control. They also taught their brothers how to drink like gentlemen, instead of like pigs. And then, of course, it went downhill. But then again, everybody quit joining fraternities. You know, there was a period there when it went from like 96% of the student body belonged to fraternities, and if you didn't get asked, you hung yourself or something. And then it dropped off to about 50%.
Why do you think that was?
Well, that was that period when everybody was, you know, peace-loving, live out in the country and have a dog and go fishing, you know, that sort of thing. I think that's when fraternities were kind of at their low ebb. And that's when they tore up the houses pretty much, too, I think. I always thought that the move to the country was not a bad thing at all for students. Get to know the environment, as well as just the white tower there, and the ivory tower at the university. I think it's been hell on real estate. But yeah, that was definitely the move to the country.
So what was the feeling in Lexington? I wasn't here at that time. What was the feeling in Lexington when they proposed this idea of saving the fraternity?
Well, I think probably there was a great sigh of relief because they were really a mess. I mean, they were eyesores. And I'm sure that the people, you know, in downtown and in town were relieved to think that they were going to fix them up. Of course, it looked like Lebanon, you know, Beirut in town while they were doing it. God, it was a mess. But I'm sure they're relieved. Because they look a whole lot better. I mean, definitely.
Tell me What do you mean it looked like Lebanon? What do you mean?
Oh, well, they leveled everything. I mean, there were piles of rubble and you know, they knocked down all the trees and it was tore up dirt and it really did. It looked like Beirut. While they were doing it, that summer, especially that summer, Red Square, when they tore up Red Square, there wasn't a whole lot left except the shell of those three buildings. I'm not too sure that having a concrete slab between the three of them is a great idea. It just means all the glass gets broken instead of embedded in mud. Oh well. And I did miss the trees. And they said most of them were ailing and probably going to die anyway. I'll never live long enough for them to grow as big and pretty as they were.
So one thing we haven't even touched on slightly is coeducation. What do you think that has meant?
It's meant that the academic standards have gone back up where they belong. The girls are smart. They're really smart. I think they give the boys a boost, too. I really do. Actually, you know, there has to be something else wrong with the boys we're recruiting, because they're all bright. I mean, they're getting good SAT scores and things like that. They don't have to dig around down in the 1100s anymore. But there's sure something missing.
What do you mean? Tell me what you mean by
that. Well, I don't know. I really don't know. All I can put my finger on is that someplace there in the last few years, they've ceased to be civilized. They are not the well-bred young men that we used to have. They are not Washington and Lee gentlemen. They're little savages. But they're very bright little savages. Are they just recruiting for grades now, and they don't look at the other parts of their personality? I don't know. I don't know what the standards are anymore, what that they pick them on. I really don't. I tried to sit down with Julia one time because she works over there in recruiting. But we never had time because I was doing Sam's, feeding Sam's geology students the summer program, the tech program. I never did get to really pick her brain. But something's happened. And I never had all that much contact with the girls. About the only time I ever saw the girls was when they were at a party. And yeah, boy, I'll tell you, sometimes they're as bad as the boys, if not worse. I have heard some language out of some of those girls that really would curl your hair. Oh, me. I don't miss the university anymore. I was getting so discouraged about the whole place that I loved it so much. I really did. I don't know why I was such a believer. But I hate what's happened to it. I really do. And it's funny, but some of the alum notice it. Alumni weekends, and you talk to some of the like 15 year and more, they really notice it. the five-year returnees just want to be back. You know, they just want to be wild, be drunk, be crazy. The 10-year returnees all want to brag about, you know, my wife's more expensive than yours, my car is bigger than yours, you know, that sort of thing. And by the time they've been out for 15 years or so, they pretty much know who they are, and they look back and they think, mm-hmm, not the way it was. Not.
Of course, each one has a little 4-year window.
Yeah.
That determines how it was, quote unquote.
You know, that's one of the things that I used to try and get through to the guys and find out. I said, you know, part of the trouble is that you're losing something every year. You're not passing down anything but, you know, the party traditions. You're not passing down, you know, even job descriptions of the officers. You're not telling your new officers what they're supposed to be doing. You're not filling them in on the history of the house. Do you even have a historian? You know, things like that. Used to be that it was part of the rush ritual and all of that stuff that they got the history of the fraternity that they were joining. And their big brother sort of inculcated them in what was expected of them and the oral tradition of the house, say. But they keep losing it, and it's getting to the point where all a fraternity is a place where they all get together and raise hell.
What were some of those oral traditions? What were the differences among the houses? What would the difference be from one to the other?
Well, I don't know. I really, you know, they don't. That's all the secret stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm curious.
The secret stuff.
Were you as cook or as house mother? Were you around during rush week? What happened during rush week?
I probably knew more about ZBT than any of them, because for one thing, they had left behind all their records. When it was a Jewish fraternity, I mean, they used to get all the top honors academically. They had incredible athletes in the house, and they had left all of this stuff behind. And of course, the little Gentiles that were there when I was there, I had one half Jewish boy. He was the only, we used to make him bear the whole weight of Yom Kippur and everything else. Oh dear. But anyway, they weren't all that interested, or they didn't treasure or respect, well, not respect, because they did respect things that much, they did, but they didn't feel it the way I think the Jewish boys that had started the house would have, because they did, that was a whole ritual. It wasn't just the secret ritual that happened in the chapter room, but there was a whole. And it wasn't their, the boys that I knew, it wasn't theirs. They had come along after it had died. They built their own little tradition there. I mean, they were brothers. They were a little band of brothers. They truly were. And they were tight, and they still are. But they're not a Jewish community anymore.
So during rush week, what went on? What did you witness during rush week?
Well, that was another thing that ZBT wasn't particularly into all that much. I mean, there was a bunch of drinking and, you know, smoking cigars and eating nasty things and throwing up a lot and that sort of stuff. But they really weren't into wailing on each other and you know, being disgusting or... They weren't mean. They weren't mean.
Mm-hmm.
most of the stuff that was done at the TBT, as far as Rush was concerned, was probably a little on the childish side. It's all childish, but it wasn't mean. It wasn't meant to demean anybody, and it wasn't. I don't think anybody ever paddled anybody at TBT. Mostly they just got rip-roaring drunk together, you know. They say threw up a lot. That's one thing I tried to teach them, my God. You do not drink Ripple. You do not drink Red Dog or Mad Dog or whatever that stuff is. You can get just as good a buzz on good liquor and less of it, and you won't feel so bad tomorrow.
An important part of their education.
Well, see, that's what their brothers used to do for them. They used to teach them how to drink like gentlemen. Well, I taught them how to drink Irish whiskey. Actually, whenever they come back, they usually bring me a bottle of Jameson's. I don't even drink anymore. Not the only people I would even bother to drink with.
A while back, you made a reference to a phenomenon that I was very intrigued by when I first moved here, the law wife. People were always talking about law wives. Oh, we can get law wives to do this.
That's right.
Well, and yeah. I couldn't get a job because of the law.
The law wives come, and it's helped the Lexington school system immensely, because they come, they teach for 3 years, and they go away, and you can start somebody back at base salary again. They never are here long enough to run up a big bill. And they're all usually intelligent and personable and attractive. And I had great law wives working for me in the restaurant, waiting tables. Usually most of them would try and get something like a teaching job or, you know. There were always a few that were willing to, you know, hobnob with the... Besides, it was fun to work at the White Column. It really was. We were a big family. And I fed them well.
You fed everybody well, Maida.
Oh, me.
So are there still law wives in the same kind of way?
And I think so.
Law husbands now?
Well, now that there are more women over there, I suppose there are a shorter supply of law wives than there used to be. Because, you know, well, it must be about half and half over in the law school now, isn't it?
Looks that way.
Yeah. I don't know what law husbands do. I haven't a clue what law husbands do. Commute, maybe. It's not the greatest place in the world to get a job. Maybe do they go to law school in tandem now? Both of them go? Two lawyer family? You know, that's something else somebody ought to look into, probably. Ask somebody that knows more about it than I do. But I swear, I think that when the law school moved over across the field there and sort of amputated itself from the colonnade, there was a loss of maturity somewhere. I mean, the law school now is so totally separate. I mean, even the judicial hardly impinges on each other. I mean, I guess there is the honor court and all that. But they have so little contact anymore.
What was it like before?
Well, they were just there on campus, and they were, you know, up to 3 years older, and they were thinking about, you know, being adult citizens soon. And, you know, that does, I guess, cast some kind of maturity over the scene. Except for that 1 year that the law students were so much fun. They're usually a pretty stodgy bunch. I mean, I've had a table of like 18 or 20 lawyers, law students, come in there, and I've seen more cheerful, more lively funeral directors' conventions. It seems like all they talk about is, you know, law classes, nothing, you know. That one class 81? Yes. 80, I think this is going to be their 15th reunion this year. It was the smartest class that ever hit Washington and Lee. I mean to tell you, all of them were incredibly bright. Kerry Wilson and Neil Brickman and several of them worked for me. God, they're bright. Incredible. All of them. And fun. They didn't have to work very hard because they were so bright. And they partied and they blew away the law professors. I mean, they just didn't know what to do with them. They'd have big, enormous poker parties, and they would have... They had some of the nakedest Halloween parties I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you know, half of them go as mud people. But they were...
That could be chilly at the end of October.
They were definitely lively. Not a funeral director's convention.
Well, speaking of the kind of people who would come into the White Column, you must have had some pretty interesting alumni come in there, too. People who'd gone out and made something of themselves in the world and came back for reunions.
Well, as I say, the only people that hung out at the Columns as undergraduates were mavericks. We didn't really appeal to, you know, big groups of students coming in. The only concession we ever made to the students was we did have law school happy hour. And that was mainly because of that class and all those guys that worked for me. And we'd do that on like Wednesday night or something. And then fill up with law students, and they'd all talk about law and drink and get crazy. But asking about alumni that came back to the Columns, it would be the Mavericks that had hung out there. I mean, we were open for 10 years, so they'd go away and come back, and we did have some of those.
Yeah, but you had the best restaurant in town, hands down. So people coming from the class of 52 would have come back, wouldn't they have eaten at the White Column?
Oh, yeah, we had, I mean, like, alumni weekend and parents weekend, we had lots and lots of people in there. We used to have celebrities. I mean, Lady Bird Johnson ate there and Tom Wolfe, and they'd always bring them over there when they had somebody for contact and what have you. We had Admiral Zumwalt and all these people. Ralph Nader, he did have a hole in his shoe. He drank orange juice.
He did have a hole in his shoe?
He drank orange juice. When Lady Bird came, there was a student here whose parents were good friends of Lady Bird's, and she came with them to visit him, and they came in, and we had the Secret Service all over the place. Wayne Killey was waiting on them, and the Secret Service man said, "Don't get between me and Mrs. Johnson." I mean, never. Wouldn't think of it. All sitting around talking to their pens and things, you know? How weird.
You know, one other thing I've never heard described. When exactly was it that the wires got put underground in Lexington?
Oh, that was so much fun. It wasn't just the wires. Maybe they dug it up 3 different times.
I've never heard that. Tell me about
that. Well, it was right in front, and we were, you know, sort of cut off from the world. Everybody had to leap over piles of dirt to get in there. It wasn't great for business.
What year was that? What time was that?
I'm trying to think. It must have been like 74. 4 or 5, it was right, because I was still living upstairs. That was before I bought the house in the country. So it was early on when we first got started.
Because it was all done when I moved here in 77, and when I started visiting in 76, it was all done.
Yeah, so it must have been 74, 75, sometime like that. And of course, they did most of it in the summertime. But the tourists were supposed to be in town, of course. Never quite understood that. But they dug up the damn main street three different times. Now, it showed a whole lot of lack of foresight to me that they didn't dig it all up, put everything underground. They had to put the sewer, the gas, the lights, and the phone, I think. And I think they did manage to get two of them down at once. Maybe the phone and the electric might have been in the same conduit or something, but they'd dig it up and they'd pack it down. They'd dig it up and they'd pack it down. It seemed like it went on for a long time, but I guess it didn't. I don't know how long it took them, but it sure was dug up. But there was all one whole summer when I couldn't use the front porch upstairs because it was so dusty and ugly. It was a mess. But it was a good thing to do. I mean, we never would have gotten, it's a silly movie, Summersby, if we'd had all that garbage running overhead. It was just amazing how little time it took them to set it right back into 1860. Looked good. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. We had all of the wardrobe in the Fidel house and all of the makeup over in Sigma Nu across the street. So we had all the extras coming in and out, and it was a lot of fun. We enjoyed it. It was a good thing it was a cool summer because, man, I mean, those people had on some real costumes. Like, you know, long lisle stockings and pantaloons and all of that under and whalebone and wool and shawls and those bonnets. They'd have been dropping like flies if it was as hot as it usually is in June. Oh, dear. And I think we got all of about a minute and a half in the film.
If that.
Oh, dear. Boy, I'll tell you, that's a well-planned operation, though. I really admired the logistics of that whole thing. They really had that thing under control. They knew what they were doing. But you can see why movies cost so much. Oh, dear.
Well, are there any final words of wisdom you'd like to impart about Washington and Lee?
Oh.
And Lexington and Rockbridge County?
Well, I'm not planning on leaving. I still love it here. I'd just like to get back over on the other side of the county.
We'd love to have you.
It's a friendly county, basically, you know. I love it. I spent one summer up in D.C., and I wondered what it was that was driving me crazy. What did I miss? What I missed was the fact that you didn't say hello to anybody. You know, in Lexington, you can't go 15 feet without running into somebody you know, and everybody's friendly. I like that. I like living in a small town. And I still love that university. I just hate what's happened to it. I'll tell you, pisses me off what they've done to Frank. If there's anybody anywhere that loves that university more than he does, and got a shorter end of the stick, I don't know who it is. Frank, I love you.
That's a great way to take that. I love you too, Frank.